This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, now offering Peaberry Especial, a blend of rare pea berries from Colombia, New Guinea, and Tanzania. For a limited time at Pete's retail stores or on the web at Pete's.com.
Good morning. Here comes the KABU News for Monday, February 20th. I'm Blaine Palmer.
And I'm Becca Bartleson. The Bush administration plans to sell off 300,000 acres of public land, including 10,000 acres in Oregon.
A company based in the United Arab Emirates has been chosen to run 9 major American ports.
A high-level delegation from Iran is due in Moscow today for talks aimed at defusing Western panic over Iran's nuclear program.
We'll have all those stories and more in just a moment. Portland area weather today is going to be mostly sunny in the morning and maybe cloudy later. Temperatures will be in the 40s. Tonight it'll be mostly cloudy to the north with lows in the 30s.
Bush's $2.77 trillion budget would hike military spending another 6.9% and make permanent his first-term tax cuts. The budget also ties support for schools and services in rural counties to a program that would sell off $1 billion worth of national forest lands, including 730 acres in the Columbia Gorge. KABU's Stephanie Potter has more.
A federal payment program that helps to support schools and services in rural counties was expected to be axed by the Bush administration. Instead, in his budget proposal for 2007, Bush would gradually reduce the program by as much as 60% over 5 years and revert to tying it to timber sales after that. In the meantime, the program would be paid for with the sales of national forest lands. 10,000 acres have been targeted in Oregon, including 22 parcels in the Columbia Gorge.
The Forest Service has identified 730 acres within the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area to put up on the auction block to sell off to the highest bidder.
Michael Lang with the Friends of the Columbia Gorge.
While some people in the administration are saying that, oh, these are far-flung, difficult-to-manage parcels, there are none within scenic areas, and the administration has also said, you know, these are little parcels that are in people's neighborhood that probably nobody knows are Forest Service or BLM land. The fact is, from what we've seen, that is not true.
Lang emphasized that important values would be compromised by these sales.
Many of the parcels that we've identified so far on critical landscapes that are visible from very important public key viewing areas or very close to public trails like the Pacific Crest National Scenic Trail, or have a high probability of containing cultural resources.
According to Lang, conservationists across the country are opposed to this proposal.
But more interestingly, county governments are opposed. I believe it was a Douglas County commissioner spoke out saying that the sale of these lands will only produce a short-term revenue flow that will in no way make up for the lost federal revenue that has provided rural counties with necessary funds for education, for roads, and for other essential county services.
Julie Cox, representing the National Forest Service, stressed that nothing has yet been finalized.
You know, we all very well know and understand we have pretty major budget concerns nationally, so this is not an announcement of sale of land. It's a proposal to look at a way to fund some legislation.
Stephen Homer of the United Forest Defense Campaign would like the Bush administration to look for other sources of funding.
Even if you look at the Forest Service's budget, the timber sale program loses huge amounts of money each year for the taxpayers. The last reliable estimate that was done by the Government Accountability Office suggests that the agency loses over $300 million a year. Now, over 5 years, that's $1.5 billion. And so if you want to look, you know, for a place to find the money, you know, I think the timber sale program would be a good place to start.
But according to Homer, the administration is ready to spend even more money on timber sales.
just about every single Forest Service program is going to face a significant cut this year under the 2007 budget, except for the timber sale program, which will see a 10% increase.
Steve Peretti of the Oregon Natural Resources Council is concerned that another motivation of the Bush administration is to pit conservationists against rural counties.
Bush administration had actually opposed renewal of the county payments program up until this budget was announced. So it's kind of interesting that they sort of did a flip-flop, but only to the extent that it was useful for them in creating this sort of politically charged conflict.
Meanwhile, Michael Lang is hopeful that the sales will face major opposition.
Friends of the Columbia Gorge and many other environmental groups will help the public find out who to comment to and how to direct their comments. We expect this to be very unpopular among people in Oregon and Washington and across the country. And we also expect this not to receive very much support in Congress. However, it's very early, and we cannot take anything for granted.
Michael Lang, Friends of the Columbia Gorge, who is hoping that citizen involvement can keep the Bush administration from selling off public lands. I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
For 5 years, more than anywhere else in Oregon, Bend's economy has been flying high with few signs that it'll settle down anytime soon. A statewide recession began in late 2000 and strangled job growth in the Portland area for 3 years, but not in Bend. Central Oregon's largest metro area never posted a net loss of jobs in any year. Instead, a population boom fueled growth in the construction, retail, professional services, and healthcare sectors. Portland area, Portland and Vancouver metropolitan area has about 15 times as many people as Bend. But from 2001 to 2005, Bend added more private sector jobs than any other metro area in the state. That was 10,500 jobs. Census Bureau figures show that since the recession began, Deschutes County's population has grown by 7% a year, six times the state average, and good enough to rank sixth fastest among nearly 300 U.S. metro areas. This from the Oregonian.
The Oregon Department of Forestry is encouraging forest land owners to apply for financial assistance for activities such as tree planting, weed and brush control, and thinning as a part of the Forest Land Enhancement Program. The application deadline is March 20th. The enhancement program was developed by the U.S. Forest Service and state foresters. It typically provides as much as 50% of the cost of these forestry practices. Money is available to families that own 10 to 5,000 acres of non-industrial forest land and have an improved forest stewardship plan. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
The shipbreaking industry is looking at Coos Bay as a possible site for dismantling military and other vessels that are no longer wanted. Newport, Oregon's Port Commission overwhelmingly rejected the shipbreaking operation. Jeffrey Bishop is the executive director of the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay. He says two companies are looking at the Oregon port. Newport's negotiations with one such firm called Baybridge Enterprises fell through last year after a surprise announcement that the Virginia firm soon would be setting up shop in Yukina Bay. There was concern about pollution from waste aboard the ships, and the possibility that the hulls of the ships to be broken up might carry invasive species. Bishop in Coos Bay says he hopes to avoid such controversy. He said his agency is working toward ownership of most of the industrial property on Coos Bay's North Spit, and he said last week that his organization won't get deeply involved with the companies without community discussions and more information. Public meetings could begin early March. About 150 former U.S. military vessels await recycling. It's a job that Congress would like to be done by the end of the year. Also, there are hundreds or thousands of privately owned ships, tankers, and barges slated for dismantling.
Oregon community activists, union leaders, and church groups are banding together to promote a measure for November's ballot to limit the loan rates charged by payday lenders in Oregon. The payday loan industry has been growing rapidly in Oregon to satisfy demand for short-term loans. But backers of the initiative measure say a state law is needed to protect people from lenders who at times charge more than 500% interest. The Our Oregon Coalition is teaming up with the Maine State Chapter of the Service Employees International Union, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, the Oregon Food Bank, and other groups to place the measure before voters in the fall. The coming ballot measure campaign will mark a resumption of the fight that took place during the 2005 Oregon legislature, when a bill to limit interest rates on payday loans was approved by the Democratic-controlled Senate, but died in the Republican-controlled House. That measure was shelved by a House committee chairman, angry about insinuations by a campaign finance watchdog group that some GOP lawmakers had been bought off with campaign contributions from the payday loan industry. House Republican leaders since have appointed an interim committee to study the payday loan issue. This is from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Immigrants in Oregon are suffering under the current immigration system, according to a new report from the Northwest Federation of Community Organizations. KBOO's Joshua Johnson reports.
As Congress gets set to debate the most significant overhaul of immigration law in a decade, a new report shows life for immigrants in Oregon and the Northwest continues to be a struggle. The report from the Northwest Federation of Community Organizations shows immigrants without permanent legal status regularly face civil rights abuses, employment discrimination, and lack of access to basic services like health care and education. Ruth Alice Anderson with the statewide community organization Oregon Action says there has to be a way for people to move towards citizenship.
People who have been here who are working, who are contributing to this country through their labor, should have a right to get on the path to citizenship.
Anderson says the report shows the difference between the push for free trade for corporations and the rights of workers.
They promote the ability of capital to move freely from country to country, and yet severely restrict labor's ability to move, to make the choices that would earn them the best opportunities.
President Bush has called on Congress to pass a temporary workers program that would allow undocumented immigrants to stay in the country and work for a time. But conservative Republicans are opposing that plan and another that would allow those immigrants to seek green cards, saying it could lead to an amnesty for up to the 11 million undocumented workers in the U.S. Content was provided by the Oregon News Service. I'm Joshua Johnson, KBOO News.
Michael Chertoff says the U.S. terms for approving an Arab company's takeover of operations at six major American ports are insufficient to guard against terrorist infiltration. Chertoff defended the security review of Dubai Ports of the World of the United Arab Emirates. This is the company that has been given permission to take over the port operations. Chertoff said the government typically builds in certain conditions or requirements that the company has to agree to make sure we address the national security concerns. But Chertoff declined to discuss specifics, saying that information is classified. Chertoff said, "We make sure there are assurances in place, in general, sufficient to satisfy us that the deal is appropriate from a national security standpoint." But CBS News correspondent Randall Pinkston reports critics point to the United Arab Emirates' track record. It was the transfer point for nuclear components to Iran, North Korea, and Libya. The UAE history as an operational and financial base for the hijackers who carried out the attacks of September 11, 2001 is well established.
Roughly 6 years ago, a federal judge ordered Arizona's governor and lawmakers to improve programs for students learning English. Today, the two sides are at an impasse that could be very expensive. Since January 25th, the U.S. District Court in Arizona has fined the state $500,000 a day for each day that the sides don't reach an agreement. The bill is already $12 million, but whether the state will actually pay and even where the money would go is still unclear. Democratic Governor Janet Napolitano asked the U.S. District Court Judge Rainer Collins to order the state to hand the fine money over to public schools to benefit approximately 150,000 students learning English. Most of those in the program are Spanish speakers, and they include many U.S. citizens who are the children of Mexican immigrants and Native Americans. Republican leaders have objected. They want Collins to let the state keep the accumulating fines and then use them to implement whatever plan is eventually approved. And they're critical of Napolitano's recent vetoes. The vetoes have kept Republican-drafted legislator-approved English language bills from reaching Collins so he can rule on their adequacy. The lawsuit was decided in 2000. A federal judge ruled the state's English language instruction programs violate federal laws, requiring equal education opportunities for all students. It also found that they were inadequately funded in such areas as teacher training, class size, and instructional materials.
At two key moments in recent days, White House officials contacted congressional leaders just ahead of Intelligence Committee meetings that could have stirred demands for a deeper review of the administration's warrantless surveillance program. This according to the Washington Post. In both cases, the administration was spared the outcome it most feared, and it won praise in some circles for showing more openness to congressional oversight. but the actions have angered some lawmakers who think the administration's purported concessions mean little. Some Republicans said that the White House came closer to suffering a big setback than is widely known. A House hearing came a day after a prominent Republican member called for an inquiry into the wiretrapping program. This just 2 days after Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez had angered some senators by defending it without providing details. On February 8th, House members were grumbling that the administration apparently planned to have Gonzalez, joined by former NSA Director Michael V. Hayden, provide the same limited briefing to the House Intelligence Committee. But the White House unexpectedly announced it that Gonzalez and Hayden would give the 21-member committee more insight into the program's procedural aspects. The briefing placated many members when committee leaders later said the panel will look further into the program. They made it clear it will be a controlled process rather than the free-willing investigation some Democrats want. White House spokeswoman Dana Perino said that Bush is open to ideas from Congress regarding legislation, and we've committed to working with Congress on a bill.
Along with time, legal options are running out for Michael Morales. On Friday, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger denied Morales' bid for clemency, leaving the condemned inmate at the mercy of the courts. In 1983, a jury sentenced Morales to death for the 1981 rape and murder of 17-year-old Terry Winchell in San Joaquin County. Fueling Morales' claim for mercy is what his attorneys called the false testimony given under oath by a profoundly untrustworthy jailhouse informant. The informant testified at Morales' trial that while in jail, the defendant bragged in Spanish of killing Winchell. Morales only speaks English. Nevertheless, Morales does admit to committing the crime. In a handwritten letter to the governor last month, Morales said his actions were those of a misguided youth, disturbed on drugs. Morales claims age and time have helped him see the error of his ways. Morales was 21 at the time of the crime. Schwarzenegger said in a released statement, Morales' claim that he is a changed man does not excuse the brutal murder and rape of Terry Winchell. Last week, the California Supreme Court refused to commute his sentence to life in prison without the possibility of parole. A federal judge in San Jose failed to issue a stay of execution on the grounds lethal injection constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. The state has agreed to place an anesthesiologist in the death chamber to assure Morales remains unconscious throughout the procedure. Morales' legal team is expected to appeal to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Florida officials have released a videotape showing guards at a juvenile detention facility hitting and forcefully restraining a 14-year-old boy whose death the next day prompted calls to shut down the state's teen boot camps. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement, one of several agencies investigating the death of Martin Lee Anderson, released the security camera video after news organizations sued to obtain it. A medical examiner said Anderson died of natural causes, but his parents and some Florida lawmakers said the video showed he was beaten to death. Anderson collapsed during an exercise drill on January 5th, a few hours after he arrived at Bay County Sheriff's Office boot camp in Panama City, Florida. He died at a hospital the next day. The camp is one of five in Florida that are operated by county sheriff's departments under contract with the state and serve as alternatives to jail for juveniles. Anderson was sent there for stealing a relative's car. This according to Reuters.
Democratic Senator Joseph Lieberman and Republican Representative Tom Davis say the woeful response by the federal agency to Hurricane Katrina shows a need to overhaul it. They want the Federal Relief Agency to ensure a more effective response to future disasters. Representative Davis chaired a House of Representatives panel that issued a scathing report last week on the federal response to the August 29th storm. According to Reuters, he said, "I think FEMA has got to be reorganized." Davis says the agency should be pulled out of the Department of Homeland Security. Lieberman, in contrast, argued that Congress gave the Homeland Security Department authority over both terror attacks and natural disasters. He says creating a freestanding FEMA would be the wrong way to go. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff says taking FEMA away from his department would be a big mistake. Chertoff has withstood calls for his resignation. He's accepted blame for communication, planning, and coordination flaws. Those flaws led him to go to bed on August 29th, only to wake up the next day to learn New Orleans was flooding. On talk shows yesterday, Chertoff said he planned to stay in his post as long as he had something to contribute, but he noted that he served at the pleasure of the president.
Osama bin Laden accused U.S. forces of barbaric acts in Iraq comparable to those committed by Saddam Hussein, according to an audio tape first broadcast in January and posted on the Internet in full today. On the tape, bin Laden said the U.S. criminality has gone as far as raping women and holding them hostage before their husbands. As for the torture of men, it has now come to the use of burning chemical acids and electrical drills in their joints. The tape, whose authenticity could not be verified, was posted on the Internet by the al-Qaeda media group Al-Sahab. U.S. intelligence analysts then authenticated the tape as a message from bin Laden. It was the first bin Laden tape since 2004. Bin Laden's remarks appeared to disassociate his group from Saddam's regime. He said Washington was trying to muffle any media outlet that reports the truth about the losses of U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan.
According to the BBC, a high-level delegation from Iran is due in Moscow for talks aimed at diffusing tensions over Iran's controversial nuclear program. Russia has proposed a compromise deal under which uranium for Iran would be enriched on Russian territory. Moscow is confident it can pull off a diplomatic coup and convince Iran to accept a nuclear compromise. Under the proposals, Iran would be allowed to enrich uranium on Russian soil and in Russian facilities. That way, Tehran would be able to run a nuclear power program, which the Iranians say is all they want to do. But it would not be able to divert fuel to develop nuclear weapons, which is what America and Europe believe is what Iran really wants to do. There's no guarantee, though, that Tehran will sign on the dotted line. In recent weeks, Iranian officials have run hot and cold on Moscow's idea. There's growing suspicion in the West that the Iranians are just stalling for time. Russia, though, will be pushing hard for a deal. An agreement would not only mean more prestige for Moscow, it would also help protect Russia's considerable economic interests in Iran, which could be hit if the international community imposes sanctions on Tehran.
Newly named Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh has dismissed the effect of Israeli financial restrictions on the Palestinian Authority. Haniyeh also played down the impact of a drop in Western aid, saying Arab and Islamic states would step in. According to the BBC, the senior Hamas leader also rejected calls on his group to disarm and recognize Israel. Yesterday, Israel approved a series of punitive measures against the PA, which it called a terrorist organization. Hamas, which won last month's Palestinian election, has carried out suicide bombings against Israel in recent years, although it has been observing an informal truce since 2005. The bombings were a response to overwhelming Israeli military aggression directed at Palestinian civilians. The EU, the biggest donor to the PA, has threatened to stop funding unless Hamas recognizes Israel and renounces violence. Earlier, the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, said the PA was in a crisis after Israel said it would stop collecting customs revenues on Palestinians' behalf. Abbas is due to hold talks on the formation of a new Palestinian government with Hamas leaders today.
According to Reuters, Israel has halted its monthly transfer of millions of dollars to the Palestinian Authority ahead of the formation of a Hamas-led cabinet. President Mahmoud Abbas says the move has plunged the Palestinians into a financial crisis. Israel's interim prime minister, Ehud Olmert's cabinet, decided against trying to implement tougher sanctions. Israeli defense officials had proposed them to try to weaken Hamas. Israel and the United States have called on other nations to boycott Hamas. Hamas crushed Abbas's long-dominant Fatah faction in a January 25th election, winning 74 parliamentary seats. The United States, the Jewish state's biggest ally, has asked the Palestinian Authority to return $50 million of its own aid to ensure it does not reach Hamas. The Islamic group is sworn to Israel's destruction. Israeli Defense Ministry officials last week recommended stopping all tax revenue transfers and proposed barring all Palestinians from working in Israel and from traveling between Gaza and the West Bank across Israeli territory. Yesterday, the cabinet announced a permanent halt to the monthly transfer of about $50 million in tax revenues that Israel collects on behalf of the Palestinian Authority each month. The Jewish state says it will not negotiate with a Hamas-led government, but would not cut off ties with Abbas. In fresh violence, Israeli forces shot dead two Palestinians in Balada refugee camp in the West Bank during a stone-throwing confrontation, while an airstrike in Gaza killed two Palestinian militants who the army said had been planting a bomb.
A gas buildup in northern Mexico coal mine triggered a pre-dawn explosion yesterday. The blast trapped 65 miners who were only carrying 6 hours of oxygen. Emergency officials were slowly tunneling through the debris, hoping they had access to fresh air and had survived. At least 8 miners who had been near the mine's exit when the explosion occurred were rescued and hospitalized with burns and broken bones. Union and company officials said they believed there were 65 miners trapped throughout the mine near the town of San Juan de Sabinas, 85 miles southwest of Eagle Pass, Texas. Sergio Robles, director of Coahuila State's Emergency Services, said the trapped miners were carrying 6 hours of oxygen with them and were located 1 to 3 miles from the mine's entrance. Nearly 20 hours after the explosion, rescue officials slowed by toxic gases, including carbon monoxide, had not been able to make contact with the miners, and it was unclear if fresh air was reaching them. Officials had cordoned off the area, and worried family members waited outside the security zone for information. As night fell, many built bonfires and wrapped themselves in blankets to guard against the cold. U.S. rules requires miners to carry oxygen tanks that provide only about an hour's worth of oxygen. There is evidence that some of the miners killed in January 2nd Sago mine accident used their oxygen devices, yet it took rescuers more than 40 hours to bring the victims above ground.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel says an outbreak of bird flu in the north of the country is serious. Speaking during a visit to the affected Baltic Sea island of Rügen, Mrs. Merkel said her government would do everything in its power to contain bird flu. German soldiers are being sent to the area to help contain the outbreak, and nearby poultry stocks have been culled. The lethal H5N1 strain has killed at least 90 people since 2003. France, India, and Iran are the latest countries to report the presence of the virus in dead birds. It can be caught by humans who handle infected birds, but it is not yet known to have passed between people. Scientists have warned that if the virus mutates, it could create a pandemic that could kill millions of people.
The Nigerian government says it has assembled a team to negotiate the release of 9 foreign oil workers seized by militants in the Niger Delta. 3 Americans, 2 Thais, 2 Egyptians, a Briton, and a Filipino were abducted on Saturday while laying a pipeline for Shell. The Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta said it will decide the hostages' fate in the coming days. The group has threatened more attacks, including firing rockets at tankers. The Nigerian president has set up a committee to negotiate for the hostages' release, but as yet, no contact has been made, this according to the BBC.
Residents of Prestes Maya, a massive 23-story building in downtown Sao Paulo, are facing a battle over its ownership. People who were formerly homeless have occupied the building for more than 3 years, but now the courts have given its 1,600 residents a deadline by which to leave. FSRN's Natalia Viana has the story.
Prestes Maya, the biggest building occupied in Brazil by the homeless movement, won an important battle this week. Jorge Ramucci, the man who claimed legal ownership of the building, conceded another 60 days before the 1,600 residents are evicted. The previous deadline was February 15th. Now, the MSTC, or Homeless Movement of São Paulo Center, is negotiating a solution with several deputies. They want the building to be purchased by the government so families may permanently live there. Ramushi owes about $2 million to the city hall in unpaid property taxes. On Saturday, homeless advocates will meet a secretary of the National Ministry of the Cities to ask the federal government to provide funds to the city to purchase the building. Natalia Viana for FSRN in São Paulo, Brazil.
This has been the Cable Morning News for Monday, February 20th. Chris Andre edited the news, KABU volunteers edited the tape stories, and Jim Thompson's on the board right now. KABU AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson, and I'm Blaine Pullman.
And I'm Becca Bartleson. Portland area weather today, mostly sunny in the morning, possibly cloudy later, temperatures in the 40s. Tonight, mostly cloudy to the north, lows in the 30s.
Thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR.
Be sure to join us this evening at 5 p.m. for the KABU Evening News. Wondering what to do with all that news on your mind? Volunteer in the KABU Morning Newsroom. Call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, to find out how you can get involved. And please visit our website at www.kabu.fm.
Coming up this morning on KABU at 7:30, Chris Andre, guest hosts. Her guest is Peter Schoonmaker of the Elahi Lecture Series. They'll discuss upcoming programs in their series on peak oil.
At 9, it's the Old World Variety Hour with interviews, commentary, and analysis on current issues.
At 10 on the Food Show, everything you need to know about olive oil, including an interview with Oregon's first olive grower.
And at 11, it's Democracy Now! Have a lovely day.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the third annual Oregon Queer Youth Conference. The conference is open to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, queer, questioning, and intersex youth and their allies under the age of 23 to get together, discuss the issues, and have a crazy cool time. The conference takes place at the Caitlin Gable School, located at 8825 Southwest Barnes Road, on Saturday, February 25th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, go to www.oqyc.org.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor An Evening in Vietnam, a benefit for Village School Foundation. Experience Vietnamese culture through music and dance featuring nationally known guitarist and storyteller Dun. Enjoy Vietnamese food and a special video presentation of the Village School Foundation's recent efforts to provide education resources to the children of Vietnam. The event will be held at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, February 25th at the PCC Rock Creek Campus, Building Number 3. For more information, please call 503-957-0740 or 503-997-2260.